Hey everyone, welcome into a must-win game with Maggie Gray. Today we're going to be talking about the Dodgers. We'll be talking about the New York Yankees. We're going to be talking about Aaron Rodgers and Tony Romo. It's all there for you. Let's get into it. Tarek Skubal is the newest LA Dodger. He'll be making his first start actually on Tuesday night against the Cubs. And obviously he was the prize of the deadline. And no one's all that shocked that he ended up. This is really good for baseball. This is actually the best thing that could have happened for baseball. And I know that's not what you were expecting me to say, but hear me out. Is every single sport has benefited from dynasties and villains. Dynasties create instant buy-in, instant attraction. Because whether you are someone who's rooting for the dynasty or someone who's rooting for the dynasty to fall, this is something that has been proven to help sports, to help leagues, to help viewership. There were years in the NBA where we knew the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors were going to be meeting in the NBA Finals. The ratings were as high as they were almost back into the Michael Jordan era, which think about that. Michael Jordan, as sure a thing as you had in a sport. And it took basketball and the NBA to yet another level. Showtime Lakers did the same thing. Hell, let's just start with baseball. Let's go back to the Yankees. The Yankees, if you want to go back to the days of Babe Ruth, you want to go back to Lou Gehrig, you want to go back to Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, and then fast forward, the evil empire, the Yankees of the 90s and the early 2000s. Sports benefits when they're is a team that everyone is chasing. The New England Patriots, though, being the boogeyman in the NFL for so many years, built Tom Brady up into this the greatest. I mean, before that, San Francisco 49ers, Joe Montana. I mean, I could go, the Dallas Cowboys are still dining out to this day on what they did in the 70s and what they did in the 90s. They became America's team. So to me, having the Dodgers go for the jugular and go for the third in a row before we're going to get a whole new economic structure in the sport of baseball. If you haven't heard this yet, the collective bargaining agreement is going to be expiring at the end of this season. And the owners are hellbent on having a salary cap. And I think they're going to get one. And it's going to hurt the big spending team. It's going to hurt the Dodgers. It's going to hurt the Yankees. It's going to hurt the Mets. It's going to hurt these teams that consistently outspend the others. You know, and to be honest, with Skubal, this wasn't even an outspend. This was just prospects that for some reason, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Atlanta Braves, the Tampa Bay Rays, other teams did not want to put their prospects out for a rental. And the Dodgers did. So for this one, it's not even really about money. It was just more about being as aggressive as humanly possible. The other thing no one talks about when it comes to the LA Dodgers and how they're able to outspend, seems like everyone, except for maybe the Mets, is Shohei Ohtani took a deferred contract. He signed a 10-year, $700 million deal that deferred $680 million of the salary. The guy's earning $2 million per year. The Dodgers got extremely lucky that their best player was willing to be flexible in the way that Ohtani is, because he makes so much money in endorsements in Japan and in the United States that he doesn't need a salary commensurate with his talent. This is just the pitching staff. If everyone stays healthy by the time the Dodgers get to the postseason, you've got the four-time MVP in Shohei Ohtani, and we'll see if he's actually going to be healthy enough to pitch. You've got to combine four Cy Youngs in this rotation, two from Tarek Skubal and two from Blake Snell. You've got the World Series MVP last year in Yamamoto, and you have Robleski, you've got Rokai Sasaki, you've got Tyler Glasnow, and you have Emmett Sheehan, and this is just the rotation. To me, this season just got a whole lot more interesting because I said, if the Dodgers don't win the World Series now and win the third in a row, this will be extremely disappointing. And I got pushback on that. saying, no, they already banked two World Series and everything now is just, you know, found money. And, you know, this is them being aggressive, but okay, if the results don't go their way, at least they tried. At least they tried. I'm not buying that. If the Dodgers do not win after what they just did in acquiring one of the greatest deadline pieces since CC Sabathia, Randy Johnson, Justin Verlander, I mean, these were all pieces that had massive impacts. And considering the rest of the lineup in terms of Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts and all the other incredible Dodgers players, obviously this would be a massive disappointment if they lost. You can't lose, you know, the NLCS to the Milwaukee Brewers and go, oh, well, we tried. No, and see, that's why this is good for the sport. Because you're going to have the teams that did not get Tarek Skubal, and I think they are going to be taking this personally. Not that professional players don't always want to win, but if you can be the team that stops the dynasty, that's almost even greater. Maybe not greater, but that's pretty great. If you can play spoiler to the Dodgers dynasty. Next up, New York Yankees. So far as I'm recording this on a Sunday night, they traded for a left-handed bat, infielder, Luis Garcia Jr. from the Nationals. Now, I'm a little apprehensive about this, and here's why. Luis Garcia Jr. on paper is absolutely perfect here to put into the Yankees lineup. He can play first base. He can DH. We'll get to that in a second. And there's two things that worry me about this Luis Garcia Jr. Trade. Number one, the guy's having a career year. A lot of what he is doing this season is an outlier. Most notably, leading the major leagues in slugging. And obviously, the Yankees' offense has been absolutely pitiful since Aaron Judge went down with an injury. They cannot score runs. Somehow, they continue to win. That's because the pitching staff has been so amazing. But they can't score. So, all right, you got a guy who is leading the league in slugging. He obviously has power and pop. He's slashing 283, 313, 560. He's got an 873 OPS. He's having an amazing year. He's having a career year. Playing in New York is different. And I don't want to be that person who thinks New York is the center of the world. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you playing in New York is different than playing in Washington, D.C. And I know there's a lot of fans in D.C. This is no disrespect. I'm just saying you get to New York and you're the trade deadline acquisition. You're expected to keep these numbers up and more. Left-handed bat in Yankee Stadium with the short porch. You don't get warm-up time. You don't get off-season time. You don't get time to get acclimated. You don't get any of that in New York. You strike out three times in your debut at the Yankees, they will boo you. It's a lot for guys. So when people get traded and almost don't have any idea what they're in for, and you're sort of going to be touted as the savior. Like, this is not fair to Luis Garcia Jr., but people are going to expect him to contribute to this lineup, maybe not in the way that Aaron Judge does, but they're expecting that now his bat is going to lift everyone else while Judge is still recovering. That is a massive amount of pressure to put on a guy who, again, has never hit like this before. He's never put together a full season with these types of numbers. So that would be the first caution. So he's going to play first base and DH. He's a lefty, so obviously he's going to platoon with Paul Goldschmidt, who is going to, Goldie will obviously hit against lefties. You're going to have Garcia's going to hit against righties. And now Ben Rice is going to DH and catch. So let's count them up here. You got a lot of guys who are going to be filling that DH role. To me, this shows Giancarlo Stanton's likely not coming back. At least that's what it says to me. So Giancarlo Stanton, who's been hurt most of the season, who is extremely injury prone, however, has been an excellent postseason hitter for the Yankees. Excellent. You're telling me that if they can get him back in the lineup somehow for the postseason, he's also going to play in left field? No, it won't happen. Like, the guy is going to be a liability out there, one, defensively, and two, he's not going to be able to, they're not going to want to risk it with his health. So that creates a real conundrum. if Stanton somehow is able to come back for the postseason. Because again, he's been more clutch in the postseason than Aaron Judge has in a Yankee uniform. And if they can get his bat in, that has to be the DH spot. And then I wonder about Aaron Judge. So Aaron Judge is obviously a fantastic outfielder. I mean, as a defender, he is excellent. But as far as we know, there is no timeline for him to come back even now. But you're telling me if he can't get himself back for the postseason, that he's not going to, at the minimum, DH? Like, how are they going to figure all of this out? So is this potentially a move because Judge isn't coming back? Or at least there's so much of a question that Judge might not be coming back that now they're going to be relying on the pop from Luis Garcia's bat to try to help this lineup. Because again, I understand the thinking for Brian Cashman. The American League is not that good. They might think they can win a World Series or at least get to the World Series without Judge and Stanton. Tall task, but possible. The Yankees needed a lefty bat. They did get it. But what does it say about everyone else with the Yankees who are injured? Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge. And is it possible that Luis Garcia is going to just hit the ground running as a Yankee? Completely new situation. All the weight of the world on him. It's going to feel like it. And you know nothing about whether he's going to be able to handle that pressure. All right, a little more baseball for you. Mets, we knew we're going to have a fire sale. Freddie Peralta is gone now to the Rays. This is got change of scenery guy written all over it. Let's just go last year, because last year is actually pretty indicative of who Freddie Peralta has been throughout his career. 17-6 is his record, a 2.70 ERA, pitched about 176 and two-thirds innings. In his career, a 3.59 ERA. This year, he gets traded to the Mets. Starts off okay. 3.10 ERA through the first nine starts. His last 13 starts, 2-6 with a 6.44 ERA. It's doubled. Ballooned. And this guy now, in Freddie Peralta, has lost all confidence. The team is terrible. Every button that David Stern tried to push has completely backfired. He stepped on every rake possible as the general manager or president of baseball operations, whatever. And Freddie Peralta will rebound now with the Rays. I am sure of it. You know, when things started to go south for this team, the Mets, that is, he was expected to be the stopper. He was expected to be the ace. And those expectations, when the team behind you is god-awful, and when you are getting used to an entirely new pitching staff, new pitching coach, new way of doing things, he just lost himself. And not only could he not be the stopper, I think that extra expectation just weighed on him, not to mention he's in a contract year. So he was hoping, I'm sure, to be somewhere in the neighborhood of, I don't know, $200+ million hitting the market at the end of the year. And so not only is the team he's on maybe one of the worst that the Mets have ever put together, which is saying something, considering expectations, he's watching tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars vanish. I can't even imagine pitching under that kind of stress. Now, baseball players are weird. Professional athletes, they can compartmentalize, but not like that. Freddie Peralta, you know it and I know it. He's going to go to the Rays. He's going to find the fastball again. He's going to start locating it. The off-speed pitches are going to work off the fastball, and he is going to be a meaningful part of a Rays postseason run. And it's going to make David Stearns look even worse. But listen, you had so much change with the New York Mets, and when everything started going wrong, everyone was looking at each other, waiting for someone else to do something. And Freddie Peralta, who had just arrived, yet was given the moniker Ace of the Staff, I think people expected him to really step into a leadership role. But once he lost it on the mound, then your words don't carry any weight. If you're a supposed ace and you're pitching to a 6 ERA, you're not giving the rah-rah speech. You're not bringing the guys together. Ultimately, that always has to land on Juan Soto or Francisco Lindor, and there's been a lot written about their relationship, not exactly peaches. So the Mets are devoid of leadership. Freddy Peralta couldn't be that guy. He completely lost himself. Now he's on a team that is a no doubt playoff team, definitely going to be a World Series contender, and watch, Freddy Peralta is going to be fantastic. Okay, I want to switch over to football for a second, because Aaron Rodgers has found this sort of like zen kind of space for his supposed last season in the NFL. He's got his old coach, Mike McCarthy, back with him. They're reunited in Pittsburgh. Rodgers coming off a playoff appearance last year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And now talking about how he's reunited with his family, how his wife, who still nobody has ever seen this woman, never seen her, never heard of her, don't know her name. This mysterious woman has opened his eyes, he said, to Kyle Brandt on ESPN, and opened his heart, I guess, about reconciling with his parents. Now, I'm going to take it one step further. I think it's very important that Aaron Rodgers, that this season is seen as a celebration of him. When you're doing interviews where you come off as a conspiracy theorist and anti-vaxxer and all these political issues, and you feuding with Jimmy Kimmel, and you're, you know, got all this, just a lot of noise around him, you're going to make half the people love you and half the people despise you. And I think it's important for Rodgers, and the family is the symbolic gesture here, although I'm sure this is fulfilling in his life, but this symbolizes a burying of the hatchet. Aaron Rodgers, the lightning rod, is taking a step back, or might be gone. Aaron Rodgers, the unifier. Aaron Rodgers, the 100% approval rating. Aaron Rodgers, the fan favorite. That's going to be the vibe for this last season. I think it's important for Rodgers that he be remembered as a great quarterback. Of course, everyone wants your legacy to be intact. To not go out in terms of his playing career on controversy, on perceived negativity, pettiness, being extremely online, you know, all these things that we know are just not good for your mental, right? I think it's important that Aaron, just go out as a football player. He has to be thinking about setting up whatever is next past football. Now, he has said he would never go into the media, but I gotta say, most guys say that. They see us, people in the media, as we're the problem, we're the pot stirrers, we're all the things that in a locker room you don't want. But then, when you get to the outside, especially for guys like Rodgers, there's a ton of money to be made. There is a ton of respect that will be shown to you. People will treat you incredibly well. And you really can pick and choose whatever you want to do. So I got to give credit to McLovin on this one, who joined me on the pod last week. When the news of Tony Romo's arrest came down, Perloff thought that Aaron Rodgers would be the play for CBS. And J.J. Watt will take over the job for this year, as he's already been announced that he'll be with Jim Nance now. And that they'll wait it out for Aaron Rodgers, because for your number one team, you really do want a quarterback, just like Fox won Tom Brady, you know, Troy Aikman for so many years, like Kurt Warner, Kirk Herbstreit. I mean, Kirk is still such a clunky fit on NFL games, but, you know, I could also see Amazon making a run for Rodgers. So to me, while I would have never thought Rodgers would reunite with his family because of all, I mean, this has been decades, reportedly, that they've been estranged. He also said he would never do media, and I think everything is on the table. Brady's getting paid over $300 million to call games on Fox and show up to, like, other corporate events. That kind of money, even if you already have a lot of money, can be hard to turn down. And you can work as little as you want if you're Aaron Rodgers. You can just do games. You don't have to do studio shows. You don't have to be calling in to do radio shows. You can be as selective as you want to be. And I think with this final season, if I'm correct in that he wants to just be as, I don't want to say vanilla. It's not that. I think he's going to be tapping into sentimentality. I think Rodgers is going to try to be savoring the last little bit of his career. I think he's going to make a point of it. I think he's going to say how, you know, he's going to point this out in every city that he goes to. And it's just going to be this big farewell tour. And I think he wants people, fans, to feel the sentimentality along with him. And also reminding people that he is this great quarterback and he still is charismatic. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the Steelers this year as far as on the field. But I think this is getting everyone back on Team Rodgers and kind of being in everyone's good graces. So I don't think you're going to hear a lot of politics. I don't think you're going to hear a lot of conspiracies. I don't think he's going to be weighing in on Dr. Fauci. I don't think you're seeing any of that from Rodgers this year. This is all going to be about sentimentality. And I see a commercial coming maybe midway through the season, maybe towards the end, like a thank you, Aaron, or, you know, I remember when Derek Jeter was retiring and it was like a Nike commercial where he was driving through the streets of New York City, you know, something like that. So we'll see if I'm right. Okay, finally, about another quarterback, and that's Tony Romo. As I said, he's now been placed on leave from CBS. And I saw something that Dez Bryant, obviously his former wide receiver, said on Twitter, and I think it's really smart. And if I were Romo, I would 100% listen to Dez Bryant. I'm not sure how many times I ever said you should listen to Dez Bryant, but he has a fantastic idea. The idea was really for Romo to... Listen, it's a lot of money to leave on the table, $74 million. You might want to try to, you know, if CBS is going to part with him and they want that money, like, you try to claw it back. I don't know if this is going to get messy if CBS tries to terminate the contract. I just want to say, I think Romo repackaged in a different way is a smash hit. He's not great on games. It started out good. He kind of had this magic trick where he knew the play before it happened. He knew exactly where the quarterback was going and what they were doing. And it was like this weird, like, again, like it was like an abracadabra. Like it was crazy how accurate he was in knowing what other quarterbacks were doing. But as he got further and further away from the game, he didn't have that same touch anymore. He went to go pull the rabbit out of the hat and nothing was there. Romo has never really been great in the big moment either. It's a lot of, here we go, Jim. I don't know. He's making these weird sounds. And this is not even like an homage to, you know, John Madden with the booms and the, but, you know, it all felt unpolished for these massive moments that Tony Romo is calling. You know, Super Bowl, AFC Championship game. I mean, he's gotten these incredible games, and I'm always wanting more when it comes to Romo. I think he'd be better off in a different area of media. Maybe he's better as a podcaster. Maybe he's better reacting to the game after watching a little bit of film. Maybe he's better previewing the game. Maybe he should just go on a golf course somewhere. But I do think there is a way and there is a lane for Tony Romo to build something. Like if he's breaking down film, if he's, you know, telling stories about the Cowboys, like I want to hear all that stuff. I just don't want to hear him on games because it's annoying and he gets in the way as opposed to complimenting the game. So maybe something that is 100% personality driven, something edited, doesn't have to be live. I absolutely think that there is a place for Tony Romo in media. And I'm not saying that the getting pulled over and getting arrested and the public shame of that and potentially losing your job, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying I don't think it means his media career is over by any stretch. Maybe he tries ESPN. Maybe he likes being a talking head on ESPN. Maybe he's a great studio guy. Maybe he's like Alex Rodriguez. Like Alex Rodriguez is so stiff and was horrible on Sunday Night Baseball when he was calling games with Matt Vasgersian. Terrible. Put him on the Fox set with Big Poppy and Jeter, and all of a sudden, it's fun. So again, Romo, I think, will be in the media, but better off for all of us. Maybe J.J. Watt takes over on this one, and Tony can sit the season out. Okay, that's going to do it for me. Thank you so much for listening. We'll have two more pods coming for you this week. Please, please, if you could check out the YouTube channel at A Must Win Game, hit the subscribe button. It's very, very easy to do, but certainly does give an assist to the show. So thank you so much. At Maggie Gray on Twitter, at Maggie Talk Sports on Instagram, and we'll see you on Wednesday.